This is Will's Band of the Week for February 28th, 2021. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with David from the brand new, sparkling Brooklyn studio.
Sparkling.
So, how did the workers do that I sent out there for the $10,000 studio upgrade?
Oh, it's great. Got the new stereo. I got a new rug. Artwork. You know, everything's good.
It looks good. I don't know if you have anything yet to match Anurag's Flaming Lips artwork, though. That sets a pretty high standard.
No, I don't. I don't have anything as good as that or as good as what Chris has behind him, the giant.
Yeah, well, we can all strive for better. Fourth Bedroom Studios here is pretty humble, too. I really don't have... It's kind of disappointing, actually. There's no actual music memorabilia in here. There's just a bunch of random... Well, there's a picture of me at about age 18 doing a leap with a, what would we call it? A Gibson Les Paul copy. A cheap imitation of a Gibson Les Paul, and I'm doing this leap in my backyard. So, that's kind of fun.
Well, I have actually a floor full of crates of LPs, so it makes me look like a hip LP collector.
Yeah, now when you're on a...
Not as hip as our friend Sarah. She's got the real setup.
Right. When people are on, you know, now that everybody's doing a Zoom call or whatever to make TV appearances, it seems like the guests always have their books on their shelf behind them, and they're very, very carefully, you know, displayed because they want people to know, like, what books they're reading. So I was thinking you could do that with your LPs, but it's pretty hard to read the side of an LP because it's so small. If it's in the background, right?
They'd have to be frontally displayed.
Yeah, you have to face them on a shelf, and you have to decide what are the coolest LPs that I have for the audience. So,
there are these new little stereo units that they sell that have a slot, you know, a space at the top for your turntable. And then sort of bin areas for your LPs, so you can flip them like in a record store. So they're not sideways, they're frontal. And then sometimes they'll have a thing at the top where you can put, like, now playing. You can display one LP up there.
That's cool.
So that's what you need. You need one of those displays.
Right. Yep.
Makes you look like you're in a hip record store.
My last memory of listening to an LP kind of in that context was when my wife and I on our trip to Scotland a year and a half ago, there was a layover or a two-night layover in Iceland, and Craig had told us this cool bar that has a record player in Reykjavik, and we went there, and I put a Kraftwerk album on, and I felt like I was cool. And it was cool that Craig had been there, too. So, you know.
He played a Kraftwerk album in a bar in Reykjavik.
Yep.
I mean, that's...
Isn't that fun?
It doesn't get any cooler than that. Could be like a proto-martyr lyric right there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That was cool for about just a few minutes.
Yeah. Well, it's all it takes. That can last a long time.
True. I hope that's all accurate. Now Craig's going to say, no, I was never there. You're imagining that. But I think it's right. So
I mean, I'm still feeling cool because I had... vodka sprayed on me at that Fontaine's DC riot that we were at.
Uh-huh.
In Austin.
Yeah.
That was the coolest moment I've had recently, and I'm still going with it, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
It's still working for me.
Yeah, we got to make the cool moments last, don't we?
Exactly. Yep. Exactly.
Savor them. Yeah.
Gotta make it last.
Well, we've got a lot of...
I do have LP news, actually. It's sad LP news, which is that Rough Trade Record Store in Brooklyn,
mm-hmm.
which was also a performance space in the back room. Craig has been there with me.
Yep.
I've been there a few times, and it was a great performance space. Anyway, the record store is moving. They're not closing. They're moving to a new undisclosed location. But as far as I know, they're not going to have a performance space anymore. I think that was just the luck of the draw that they had this big room in the back. So it's really sad.
That is too bad. Yeah, I was there once. I didn't see a band there, but I saw the space. It looked really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who knows how many venues won't come back when venues come back. But that's one definitely has disappeared. So
there seems
just
to be
updating you on that.
Yeah. There seems to be some optimism now, I think. I think people are starting to at least try to have an optimistic outlook now that the vaccines are well underway, that some places are going to start to, that they'll survive, you know, that we're seeing getting toward the end here.
I just saw a festival announcement for, I forget where it was, but it's a U.S. festival announcement. It was for September, but, you know, they even had a lineup.
Seems like it could be possible.
Oh, it's in, I can't remember, except Jeff Tweedy was playing. Was it Illinois? Did it be Illinois? I don't know, but it was a festival in September, and they had the full lineup. It's like a one-day thing, not a full multi-day thing.
Well, let's hope it happens.
I also saw something today that suggests that if the vaccine supplies are what they're expected to be, because their supplies are ramping up very quickly, theoretically, you could get something like 70% of the U.S. population vaccinated by the end of April.
Yeah, I read that.
That's
too.
If everybody could get it, you know, went out.
Yeah.
Was not resistant. I mean, that's like, you know.
Yeah.
You get to that level, you can pretty much open up everything.
Yeah. Hopefully, you know, I guess the question is going to be, does that, either the South African or the London variant, if they're somewhat resistant, then it'll be hard to squelch it completely. Then they'll have to develop, you know, a booster or a new vaccine. At least I think they can develop the vaccine with the mRNA ones. They can develop them quicker now. So eventually, I keep thinking we're gonna beat it now. The science is gonna surpass the coronavirus at some point. It's just a question of when we get there. Well, good. We have fun stuff today. We have a couple new things, one really new thing, and then we're going to go back to the vault, and it's going to be fun. So, should we start with Nana Yamato?
Yes.
She's
You brought her up. I have no idea where you found her, but this is an amazing find.
Somebody reviewed it. I listened. I thought it was good. So the rest is history. Yep, she's from Tokyo, and seems like why wouldn't there be more Tokyo indie rockers or Japanese indie rockers? I guess we've had some Japanese bands, but I don't know. You'd think like
Bieber,
right? That
Chai,
was
they're nothing like this.
Yeah, this is more.
This is a whole other thing.
Yeah. Well, we'll let the listeners decide how they want to describe it, or we could instruct them on how they should interpret it. But the album is called Before Sunrise. There's also a my version here also has the I guess Japanese word for that, which appears to be Yokame. And it's kind of indie poppy, but it's kind of dynamic and cool sounding. How's that for a description? Cool sounding. That's how I describe music.
That's pretty vague.
Yeah. Well, we'll play a track and then see if I'm right or wrong.
Yeah, I would have to put it in a category basically of bedroom pop because she does all of her own stuff. And it just has that kind of sound that a lot of self-produced artists have.
Yep.
It's kind of poppy, but it's very introspective.
And one thing...
Moody. It's a moody record.
Yeah, I'd say so. And one thing she's good at is the drum sounds, I think. There's a lot of cool, dynamic drum sounds on this, which really enhance it, I think. So, I had a few different tracks I could pick, but I think, why don't we start with number four called Gato?
Yes, absolutely.
Nana Yamato, the album is a nice, lean 12 songs, 32 minutes.
Yeah, I'm suffering from the fact that I've searched for lyrics in English, and I have not found any, and I'm kind of a lyrics person.
Mm-hmm.
But I gather that generally she's writing about kind of wandering the streets of Tokyo. There's stuff about the walking past the Olympic Stadium, which is sitting empty, of course. And just general emptiness of things these days. Anyway,
yep.
Introspective songs. So I'm told, but I can't read the lyrics, so I don't know.
Got to trust the description on Bandcamp that tells you about it. So, yeah.
So I'll tell you what I'll pick, but only if I can depend on you to pick the best song on the album.
Well, I guess if that's the demand, then you just take the next two picks. That's fine with me.
No. You have to tell me. You have to tell me what your
you want to know
would be.
You want to know what my next one would be?
Yeah,
I think it would be number three, Burning Desire.
Oh, I like that one. All right. Well, it's just that I have a favorite, but I also have a second favorite. So I thought maybe I could sneak them both in, but I can't. Sometimes you and I overlap, so I figured you might say, oh,
yeah,
I've got that on my list. Okay, so what should we go with? Or should we do four?
Yeah, we can do four.
All right, well, let's do Burning Desire. I like that.
Baby.
the horns are cool in that song, right? Or
yeah,
maybe synthesized horns, but
yeah,
you know, lead horns like that can be really cool. And you can imagine, like, seeing it live, if they had, like, one or two real horn players, it would seem super cool.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those things, you wouldn't want to have that in every song. But if you have it, if it's used sparingly enough, I think it's very effective.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm going to say you're going to have a hard time beating out those two tracks I picked. But you're going to be given a chance.
My picks are 10 and 12, which actually kind of blow together, because in between, the 11th track is really just a little piece of street noise. It's called Morning Street.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a bridge. 10 is called Under the Cherry Moon. I think you might have heard that title before. And 12 is the Day Song. And they just sound very nice, sort of stacked together. I'm especially partial to the Day Song because it's one of those things that builds and builds.
All right. Well, let's first play number 10, Under the Cherry Moon.
Mm-hmm.
Let's bump it up to number 12, the Day Song.
Oh,
just love the way those two sound together. But that last one, it just knocks me out every time. I don't know what that instrument is that comes in at like a minute or so.
Yeah, I think it's a guitar, but it's... I thought it was a guitar, but I can't be sure.
I guess it's like a fuzzy guitar, yeah. Kind of discordant and just like makes the whole thing.
Yeah, you did a pretty good job matching my two, I think.
I listened to that track maybe 10 or 11 times already.
Well, that's a strong showing.
I know. It just grows on you.
Great. Amazing. Yeah, it's a fun album, and it's not all the same. You know, it's all well done. And when you get to the end of the album and it's still really strong, that's always obviously a good sign. So,
absolutely.
Well, you were telling me in pre-production that that this kind of led you into the vault, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, it reminded me. I mean, it may just be me. I have no idea. It reminded me of a record that I started listening to maybe a year or two ago that I had completely overlooked. Not just the record, but the group itself.
Okay. Well, then I guess it's time then for a spontaneous trip to the vault.
Okay.
It's got to be in here somewhere.
Oh my god, I can't believe I still got this.
Wow, when this came out, I was still in diapers, and David was already getting laid.
All right, we're back in the vault. I should have reverb on my voice right now, since we're in the vault discussing this, but...
Yes.
Yeah.
You should have that Crypt Keeper sound going.
Yep.
So anyway, the duo that it reminded me of just a little bit, but just that kind of synthy, sweet, a little bit kitschy kind of sound is Dean and Britta, who I'd never really listened to, and they have, I guess, two full albums. They actually have a quarantine offering from 2020. They have an album called Quarantine Tape.
So I know that the Dean
mostly covers.
The Dean is Dean Wareham, who was one of the founding members of Galaxy 500, and Britta Phillips. Was Britta in Galaxy 500?
No. So Dean split from Galaxy 500, and the remainder was a couple, Damon and Naomi.
Oh, that's right, Damon and Naomi.
Formed Luna, a much beloved band. Well, Galaxy 500, a much beloved band. Luna, also a much beloved band. And then Britta became a member of Luna. And then he split off from Luna.
Okay.
I mean, the guy just can't stop, you know, he just can't sustain a relationship, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
No, actually, what he said was interesting about Luna, which was basically, we had a pretty good run, but there's a time when you're like finished doing what a band has to do, and then you move on, which people rarely say. And he basically said, we're done here. We're going to do something else.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes some sense, too.
Anyway, so he and Britta, who is also his wife now, formed this duo in, let's see, what was the first? The first album is, look at the discography. I guess it was 2006, something like that. First album is called La Ventura. And it has some cuts on it that I think people might actually, a lot of people have heard. It's actually the second album that I think is really interesting. And it's called Back Numbers. Came out in 2007. And I just was not really aware of any of this. And when I started listening to it, I thought, wow, I really missed something here. I guess it helps if you're a Luna fan and you're used to that voice or one of the voices. But they have a very, what I describe as a very Nancy Sinatra and Lee Hazelwood kind of smoky, mellow kind of vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Little reminiscent of some of the stuff that Nani Yamato is doing. And I just love this record. Can't believe that I, took me 13 years to discover it. But it did.
Well, I queued it up, so... Do you have a track or two or three that you'd like to play?
Yeah, I like the whole thing. Can we just play the whole thing?
We no. just put it on, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Track. Yeah, first track. Excellent.
All right, number one is called Singer Sing. Yeah, that's cool. It definitely has the you can, you know, it sounds like it is, you know, harkens back to Galaxy 500 and Luna, right?
Definitely. But,
cool.
You know, having the two voices is different. It's very different.
Yep. Dean and Britta and the album is called Back Numbers. Well, mm-hmm. Let's play another one. Are we going to go number two and then you're going to say number three, number four?
Well, did you listen and get a pick? Or,
I didn't because I only listened to that track after you sent it to me. And since I was cramming for the other thing we're talking about this week, I didn't get around to listening to this one.
Well, there's one song that I love on here that I thought was an original and turns out to be actually a Lee Hazlewood song, which is ironic because that was what I was thinking they sounded to me.
Mm-hmm.
But it was not done by Nancy and Lee as in the original. It was done by, are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Anne Margaret was the singer.
Oh man.
Is that weird?
That's a throwback. Yeah.
That is a big throwback. But it's very much in that vein. And it's the fourth one, You Turn My Head Around. Be prepared for something very, very wild.
Turned my
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, that's really striking when she does it.
Yeah, I can see that being a lead-in from Nana Yamato. Fun stuff.
Definitely.
It's fun when a new thing reminds you of an old thing and you go back. Although you said you hadn't listened to this, like, way back when.
No, it completely escaped me. I mean, I knew that I've actually heard some of their tracks individually. There's a song on the first album, which you might have heard, called Moonshot. But if you played it, you'd probably recognize it. Hmm. It sounds a lot like a Luna song. But, yeah, there's great stuff here. So they put out in, again, unbeknownst to me, I missed all this. I just discovered they put out a record in 2020 called Quarantine Tapes. I guess if your recording partner and your musical partner is also your spouse, then being in lockdown doesn't really change much of anything for you in terms of recording, does it?
Right. I guess not.
But in any case, well, I mean, it changes it, I guess, because you don't really have anything. You're not out touring or anything, so you have all the time in the world to just record, practice, write, whatever, record. Anyway, they did basically an album of covers. Some cases they're covering Luna, or they're covering themselves, but they also cover Lou Reed's song, Right Into the Sun, really nice. I'm So Bored with the USA, a couple of other songs, a Bee Gees song. It's an interesting mix of stuff.
And they always seem to do things in their own style, right?
Yes.
So when they
it's
do
their
a cover,
sound,
yeah.
It's their sound
yeah.
on all of that.
That's
but
cool.
Their song, Donna Lou Reed song, sounds actually very, I mean, what could be more, it's kind of full circle because Luna is very influenced by Velvet Underground.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say. Yeah, well, cool. People check out Dean and Britta. And Damon
yeah.
and Naomi, maybe, too.
Yeah.
That could be a double bill, right? Dean and Britta and Damon and Naomi.
Absolutely.
Then they could all get on stage together for a final jam of a Galaxy 500 song.
That's right.
Well, maybe as long as we're in the vault, we've gone into the vault already.
Mm-hmm.
Should we play my vault picks? I've got three vault choices, single tracks. And I thought periodically we think about this. We're like, well, if there's not a new release that we're excited about, or if we just feel like doing it, play three mm-hmm. songs that you really like. We started this a couple of years ago when Craig was in town, and we haven't done it too many times. And I think I was just thinking about it the other day, and I was thinking, man, I could pick some great songs. You know, they're great according to me, of course.
Right.
Maybe not according to the listeners, but we'll find out. So I've got three. So the first one I have is we're going to go back to 1992, back in the good old days of 90s, early 90s indie rock.
Mm-hmm.
There was a fun, I think you'd probably call them power pop, band I liked a lot from Boston called the Lemonheads. And they were, their leader was a guy named Evan Dando. And I think they might have put out an album like in the last few years. Or
I think he's still around.
I think he is. And there were a couple of albums in the early 90s. And I think they had a few albums before these two albums. And then they finally kind of hit it relatively big, for at least
yes.
for by indie rock standards. So It's a Shame About Ray was in 1992. And then there was one in the following year, 1993, called Come On, Feel the Lemonheads.
Mm-hmm.
And but I have just always loved the title track to It's a Shame About Ray. There's something about the just how it flows, and let's play it.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
shame about Ray. I love that effect of making it sound like he's holding that last note for like over 30 seconds, which I think in the real world, I think you would have not been able to like hold a note for that long. So there's probably some studio trickery there, but it's cool studio the magic. Way they do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's an old favorite of mine. And it's also, I think I was talking to Chris about this the other week, about how songs you love, they're easy to play. And that's another thing I love about this song. I love playing bass along with this song because it's really easy, but it's like really cool at the same time. So all you hack bass players at home, play along with It's a Shame About Ray. You'll be like, oh man, I played that note. That was so cool. So
I take your word for it.
Yeah. So highly recommend it. All right.
Number two.
Okay. I have a little story on this one. Back in, back in 2006, I went to see a show, and it was at a place in Madison called The Annex, which happens to be right across the street, like literally right across the street from Barrett's Coffee Shop. And I had seen a few other shows there, but I went to see the bands, kind of co-headliners, because they were equally popular bands of that era. Not a Surf and Rogue Wave. And I later found out that Barrett was at the show, but I either didn't know Barrett or I barely knew him and didn't know he was there. Chris left to tell us if he was there. He might have been. But anyway, I was like pretty much in the front and watching Not a Surf and really enjoying them. And then they played this song that I didn't really know very well. I was really a huge fan of their album Let Go, which was from 2002. Then I think they had one more album called The Weight is a Gift. Maybe in about 2005. I didn't look it up. That was maybe the current album at the time. But they...
2005. You got it.
They launched into this song from their 1998 album called The Proximity Effect. The song is called 80 Windows. And I just remember just being totally captivated by this song, and so ever since I've just loved it. So here it is.
But you didn't know the song when they.
I think I maybe had heard it like a couple times, but I didn't know didn't know it well. So yeah. So here it is. 80 Windows.
Thank you.
There you go. Not a surf.
So my favorite song on Let Go, you were talking about Let Go.
I had
the album that you're referencing is one I never actually listened to because I started in with Let Go and went forward, didn't go back. Yeah. My favorite song on, well, I have so many favorite non-surf songs, I gotta say, once I start looking at it. But my favorite song on that album, I think, is Paper Boats. And the reason I love Paper Boats is there's this reference of the song to what it's like when you're on the subway and there's another train in the tunnel going along with you at the same speed. Mm-hmm. And then one of them accelerates and takes off and kind of floats away from the other one. And it's such a New York, you know, only a New York artist would ever, you know, be referencing something that specific.
Uh-huh.
It's just so cool. And what's really cool about it is the music does the same thing at exactly the moment that he's describing it. The music rhythmically, you know, goes up a step and moves away from you. And it's just such a great moment. I love that song.
That's great.
But what I didn't realize after I saw that you were picking that song, I went to look and to see how many albums that they've done since then.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable. There's like a dozen records. It's a while, I guess. I guess it's almost 20 years.
Yeah, they've been around a while.
Or something. They're just putting them out regularly.
Indie rock veterans, for sure.
Absolutely. And I'm really not familiar with the last, like, I don't know, 3, 4?
Yeah, I think I've listened to all of them when they came out, and they're all good. But it's hard to capture that, you know, that magic of Let Go, but which is fine. I think, you know,
Weight Is a Gift has great stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
That is a great, great record.
Mm-hmm. So,
but yeah, I mean, they're fine.
There's your one track from Not a Surf, but maybe we should, you know, we could do the Let Go album sometime. I could delve into that. It'd be really, really easy, right? That'd be one where it'd be too hard to decide what tracks to play, and we'd have to just keep playing them. Because, you know, like there's that song Killian's Red, and God, there's just so many great ones.
Yeah, yeah, Blizzard of 77.
Yep, yep.
Blonde on Blonde.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, what a great album.
It is.
Okay, now we're talking about
They have a great album of covers, incidentally. If I Had a Hi-Fi.
Right, right. I remember listening to that.
They had some great covers on there.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yep.
All right, so my one track gave rise to a discussion of another album, but...
Totally.
Yeah. All right. I've got one more vault pick for a track. This one's kind of easy. I don't know. How can you, I mean, anybody listening to this podcast, I don't know how you could not like this song. So now I'm going to play it and people are going to be like, it wasn't that great. But I think what I'll just say two things about it before, and I won't even say what it is before we play it. But I think it just has a great, like, loud rock sound that just makes you want to play it loud. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, I think it's just really rare to be able to pull off being actually funny. You know, like, I think Baird and I know have talked about this. Like, that's a fine line to draw, right? To try to be funny and still good in mm-hmm. rock music. So and this Absolutely. This one succeeds. So everybody should probably turn up their volume right now. We'll be right back. That, of course, is Art Brut from 2005. Album one, track one. Of course, they can never live up to that from that point forward. But they still did a lot of other fun, cool stuff. But that, you know, that song, it sounds like the Sex Pistols are back, right? With that guitar arsenal.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Oh, man.
That I remember that record. That record, I don't think there's a week. Yes, you know, there's no throwaway song on there.
Yeah.
They formed a band. My Little Brother, Emily Kane, my personal favorite, Modern Art. Oh, what a Bad Weekend.
Yep. Yep. We could have gone into the whole album once again.
So hilarious.
Yep.
It's true. It's really true. But, you know, here's the interesting thing. You would think that, you know, they shot their shot with that record and that was it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe put out one more and you can't keep this up. I mean, the whole, in a sense, their whole shtick was, we're not really a band. You know, we're playing with the whole concept. We're making fun of indie rock, right?
Yeah.
While we're playing indie rock. I mean, how long can you keep that up? Well, apparently the answer is many years, because it turns out they've been recording all along.
They put out quite a few albums, I think, and I think I stuck with them for a couple more, and I remember thinking that I wasn't going to like it, and then liking it more than I thought I would, because the band is so good, you know?
But they've had records all through this decade. I haven't listened to any of them, but they're out there.
All right, well, there's my...
The Art Brut fan base is keeping them going. I guess. That's great.
Yep.
But talk about coming straight out of the chute with, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
The winner.
Right. Somebody probably has, you know, the list of like lead tracks, album one, track one, the best ones ever or whatever. Like that's got to be right up there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. I guess we'll bring it back to the present. We've got one more. We decided just hot off the presses, the Julian Baker album came out, and she's destined for indie rock stardom. She was kind
just
of, I don't know what,
48 hours ago.
Right. I guess she was in Boy Genius and she was already pretty well known. And
this is her third album.
And I think you've listened a lot more to her past stuff than I have. I've given like a cursory listen to it, and it was so stripped down. And so I found this one more interesting because it's got the full band treatment.
Yeah, talk about stripped down. The first time I saw her, heard her, was when she released Sprained Ankle, which is like the first single. And it was her and solo electric guitar. There was a video of her playing that song in like an abandoned factory. And it's just her, you know, just her and the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was kind of hooked right there. That was it. It was just an amazing song. But yeah, it was very, the first album was very stripped down, and no more. Not since the second one. It's a much, much fuller sound. I mean, if you hear Go to Genius, it's a pretty similar sound to that, I guess.
One thing I like about it is that on one hand, it seems, you know, it seems kind of like a high budget production, which always concerns me that I'm not going to like it. But then it's a lot more focused on guitar than a lot of popular high-budget productions, you know? It's not just a complete, like, synthesizer and, you know, bombastic synths like a lot of pop music. There's a lot of really cool guitar work on it.
Mm-hmm. So the album is called Little Oblivions, right?
Yep.
So we have a theme here, don't we?
What would the theme be?
I don't mean a theme for the show. I mean a theme. I mean this album has a theme.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah. And it does not deviate. It's not like there's a song or two that gives you relief, change of pace, modulate this a little bit. No, no. You as they say, you know, buy the ticket, take the ride.
Right.
And the ride in this case is. What would you call it? Confessional, very confessional. It's a addiction recovery. What's the stage where you in 12 steps where you have to make amends? She's making amends to everyone she knows, or trying to.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, and then accusing yourself of, like, manipulating them by, you know, apologizing. I mean, it gets very,
yeah.
It gets very deep. It gets very deep. But it's all about, you know, sort of the way she's treated people is not right, and she wants to make amends.
Well,
right?
We should play a track. Yeah.
Not exactly a light poppy album. So if you're not in the mood for something really, really gripping, then you gotta go somewhere else. The other thing I would say about this is, Lucy Dacus, where are you? We've had Phoebe Bridgers stepping up with a really good album, right?
Yep.
And now we have Julian stepping up with a really good album. If you have the nerves for it, so Lucy, we're calling on you.
Yeah, but I would just bet she's got one in the works. Like
I think
later this year probably.
I think she. Yeah. I think she does. But you know, she's on the spot now.
Yep.
After this, I mean, you know, Phoebe's out there smashing guitars and.
Right.
Julian's out there smashing herself up.
I saw that video of Phoebe Bridgers, and she was. It was like she was trying to smash the guitar, and it wouldn't work. She couldn't do it. And then I read that they sort of staged it because they made a monitor that was designed to either like have explosives in it or to so it could be smashed. Right, but the guitar was just indestructible. She keeps slamming it down; it won't break. The neck of a guitar can be pretty strongly bolted to the body. It's not as easy as it looks, probably, to smash a guitar. So, all right. Well, what is the first choice from the Julian Baker album?
That's a good question. I mean, I would say the first three or four, right in a row, just set you up beautifully. So I don't know which of those we want to go with, but maybe Relative Fiction would be good for a start.
All right, it's number four.
Number four.
Julian Baker. Yeah. So I listened to this whole thing. I listened to the whole thing without really focusing that much on the lyrics. And then when you pointed them out, it's like, boy, this is really dark.
Can I read you the bridge? The lyrics on this one are amazing. Just the bridge.
Yeah.
Because if I didn't have a mean bone in my body, I'd find some other way to cause you pain. I won't bother telling you I'm sorry. is something that I'm going to do again. I mean, that's, yeah. That sort of sums up the record right there, but I mean the message, but wow. Just
yeah.
Some of the lyrics on this are just, they're just so, so heartrending.
Yep. Well, like you said, we're not gonna be able to play another track and say, oh, okay, here, now it turns a little upbeat.
No, but, no, you're not gonna find that.
But I have a pick, but I haven't really focused on the lyrics, so I'm gonna look up the lyrics as we play this. So
okay.
The track that I think caught me the most musically is number 8, called Favor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Visit the family and I told you the only kin I knew was who I could see from the beginning. I used to think about myself, I thought it was a talented lie. Turns out that all my friends were trying to do me a favor.
That's Julian Baker from the new album Little Oblivions.
Yes. So you have any comment on the lyrics on that?
No, just that they're like almost as sad as the last one.
Yes. They're about suicide and you know that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Getting close to the edge.
Yep.
All right. Speaking of which, if I have one more pick,
yep,
it would be number 2, Heatwave.
Really gone, it's worse than death, that life compressed to fill a page in the Sunday paper. I had a shuddering thought, this was gonna make me wait for work. Every take it to the ground. I'll wrap up Ryan's belt around my neck and kick the shit out. On a long spiral down, and before I make it to the ground, I'll wrap up Ryan's belt.
Julian Baker. Yep. Pretty heavy.
Yeah, that song has the most lyrical description of suicide that you're going to find anywhere. I'm not going to quote it. It's just too grim, but it's really, really gorgeous and totally grim. And I guess that sums up the whole record, doesn't it?
Yeah,
really gorgeous and terribly grim.
Well, I haven't studied all the lyrics like you have, but I'll take your word for it. Maybe she needs to put out a single of like, let's go party tonight or something, like a lighthearted thing. Just so it'll be like, oh man, I don't know. I mean,
she had a song on the Boy Genius album that was not entirely, depressing. I can't remember. I think there was one that was, I mean, there are some uplifting songs on there.
It seems like, it seems like it might be like actually difficult to sing all those songs live too, you know, just, just so heavy. So it's getting a very good reception, you know, in the music world. So I think she's gonna, whether we describe it as indie rock stardom or something close to that, I think she's gonna be pretty successful with this. So hopefully that'll be a springboard to being able to cope with all these dark feelings that are expressed on the album.
Oops.
Well, yeah, we were.
So you just reminded me. I forgot. I had another piece of news to throw in there, which fits in right here.
What was that?
Which I put in the chat before, which is that Pale Hound has gotten together with our friend Jay Somm.
Oh yeah,
and formed a new super group or super duo.
Yeah,
called Bachelor.
Mm-hmm.
So of course, my fantasy is that we get a double bill of Boy Genius and Bachelor.
Yeah.
And then we can get solo sets from Jason, Pale Hound, Lucy, Julian, and Phoebe, right?
They could do their own music festival.
It's like a festival.
Yeah.
Yeah, right there.
Yeah. So
throw in, Phoebe can bring in Connor Oberst, you know?
Sure.
And, throw in a few extras, and yeah, you got a festival. Instant festival right there.
Yeah.
So anyway, I guess that's the latest trend is singer-songwriters joining forces.
Yeah, that does seem to be a thing. Well, did we do this justice? Did we do them all justice?
Yeah, this is quite a varied program we got here.
I think so.
Definitely.
Well, let's declare greater than $0 worth then.
That's good.
We make that declaration and it is deemed completed. So, well, thanks everybody. For anybody who's made it this far, that's pretty good. We're happy you did. and I know that I've got one really interesting thing that I'm hoping to talk about next week that I've only kind of sampled through, but I'm thinking this one's going to be worthwhile. So that's it. That's the stage of pre-production that we're in.
Well, I really want to thank you for introducing me to the Yana Yamato. I might have to put that on my tentative 10 best list for 2021.
A contender. There's a contender list as you go on, right? And then just as the year goes on, you have to see if something beats it out or how well it stands the test of time. So, great.
Throw it against the wall and see if it sticks.
All right. Well, thanks again, and let's sign off. We'll talk to everybody again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you each week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, with correspondents from the United States, Canada, England, and Australia. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. All of our episodes can be found at willsband.net. To contact us, send email to willsband@yahoo.com or find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.